It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 28th day of January 2020. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And it's apparently a prettyish day in Northern California because longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, being a third stage guild navigator, has indeed folded space to become Man Cave, having seen his first rainbow of the year and noticed that, yes, the mosquitoes are hatching in late January in Northern California. And tsunami warnings out for the Caribbean after a 7.7 magnitude earthquake. You know, just another day on planet Earth. Right. Hi, I'm Bob, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And the closing arguments got, or the arguments got wrapped up today among the fifth string E-list pettifoggers of Nitwit Nero's legal team. You know, that gang of low rent ambulance chasers that you wouldn't let argue a parking ticket. Jeez. After I went off the air last night, I sat here and continued to watch Alan Dershowitz. Holy shit. And to think people entrusted their lives to him. Kind of makes you think that if O.J. hadn't had Johnny Cochran, he would have been squooed badly if he'd just been relying on Alan Dershowitz. Eesh. And in terms of argument, when Pat Cipollone stepped to the microphone this afternoon and said, please don't leave Britney, I mean Donald, alone. That was the essence of it. But the funniest part of it, and I'm getting ahead of myself, the funniest part of it was that after Alan Dershowitz got done last night, Dershowitz did such a compelling job of arguing in favor of calling witnesses. He didn't mean to, but he did, you know, because, well, he's a lawyer working for Nitwit Nero, that Pat Cipollone had to stand up and rehabilitate his own co-counsel. It was the damnedest thing, just the damnedest thing. Anyway, it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday here on the Horn. And recall that on Tuesdays we celebrate those Titanic levels of right-wing intellect that are the functional equivalent of seeing an iceberg off your bow and saying full speed ahead, we're going to ram this iceberg to own the libtards. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we've got some fan-damn-tastic examples of that. But again, before I get ahead of myself, a reminder, this program begins, each and every one of them, it begins with gratitude. And so thanks go out at the beginning of the program to our subscribers for the 28th day of the month. Thank you ever so kindly to Philip and to Sharon, to Charlene in Rogues Island, and to Randy in PA. Thank you all very kindly for continuing to be partial sponsors of this program, partial sponsors of independent, commercial-free, capitalism-free, progressive radio. Thank you so very much indeed. We can always use new subscribers. They're few and far between. And because that, you know, that makes it a little easier to calculate. Well, anyway, thank you. Thank you so very much. Now, where are we fundraising-wise? Well, last night we had a kind challenge on the table, courtesy of John. And it garnered a $10 response on a $200 Have a Show on Me challenge. So that challenge is extended to today, and the fundraising goal remains at $390. Here's the good news. If we scrape up $190, that will qualify the challenge, and then we'll be even through the end of Tuesday. Can we do it? I don't know. But we are racing headlong toward the end of the month of January and the end of my 56th year. I'll start a brand new one come either Friday or Saturday, depending on how we calculate these things. And at least this one doesn't involve beginning counting at zero. So we don't have to put up with that little philosophical and mathematical argument. Yay! All right. So anyway, that's where everything is, and it would be great if we could catch up this evening, and if you'd care to jump in and you'd like to double your money thanks to John, you are mightily welcome so to do. A couple of emails get us started. A note coming in from Lady B for your consideration. Just a subject line, socialism for the elderly. Just a meme reminding us there are those of us out there who already got theirs, and they'll be damned if they're going to waste their time on us youngins who haven't put in the work. Problem is, SSI and Medicare were created for folks like them, you know, not those not independently wealthy. Back in the day, there was no guarantee they'd be taken care of in their retirement, much less live past age 65. Let me be clear. Those benefits, good. If you'd like to be part of the challenge, Brother Deacon Asa reminded me, how do we jump in on the challenge, Bob? Thanks for the reminder, Brother Deacon. Just head on over to headon.live, click on contribute, and go from there. If you'd like to be part of the challenge and become a new subscriber, that'd be awesome, too. If you want to check the box that says make this happen every month or recurring or whatever the language is, check the little box, and doggone it, you'll be out half the price of a pack of gum. A 5-stick pack of gum for every program. Something less than 48 cents. The biggest bargain in progressive media. Thanks for the reminder, Brother Deacon. Anyway, to get back to what Lady B was saying, problem is, SSI and Medicare were created for folks like them, you know, those not independently wealthy. Back in the day, there was no guarantee they'd be taken care of in their retirement, much less live past age 65. Let me be clear, those benefits are not your personal bank account. The money you put into it was not being and is not being exclusively held for your use. We middle-aged and younger folks put into it just like you did, and just like people did before you. The same goes for military retirements. Yes, you saved us from tyranny, but you still did it on the taxpayer dime. If no one's putting money into Medicare and SSI, hell, any of the existing social programs, there'll be no more benefits for anyone. If your kids can't or get to opt out of paying SSI and Medicare taxes, it'll kill those programs. Is that what some of you selfish bastards want? Because you damn sure keep voting for people who will help make that happen. I don't think Lady B is speaking to members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Or fucking not voting at all. because you got it like that, I guess. But guess what? Your ass will be affected, too. Especially when you're told you're losing your home health care aid because it's cheaper to just put your ass in a nursing home. The silent generation and boomers need to wake up. If they stop investing in the future, there will be no future. That might be cool for them, but it'll destroy their kids' and grandkids' future. The kids are angry. Us middle-aged folk are angry. Get it together, America. You could lose all this faster than you know. P.S. Watching closing arguments. Those shifty, shady motherfucking Republicans were playing clips of Democrats arguing against the removal of Bill Clinton from office. As Republicans do, they pulled those clips and used them completely out of context. Let me repeat it for the stupid. Bill Clinton was impeached for lying about a blowjob. The clips were of Democrats arguing that the Republicans were playing politics because they were trying to impeach a duly elected president over a blowjob. But now there's real evidence that our president has and continues to commit actual crimes. All of a sudden, Republicans are like, but this shit is different, though. Fuck them all. They want to play games? Let's rumble. Come November, I'll help knock on doors. Fuck Trump, the Republicans, and the media. We the people are going to have to show them all what it's like to live in the real world, and that doesn't include getting to have lunch with the president. PTS, Claire McCaskill's got it right. Step up your game, for-profit media. It was you fire-truck-chasing, ratings-bring-in-revenue-fucker democracy motherfuckers who empowered this idiot and got us into this mess in the first place. Yeah, and speaking of which, now that I am back in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, I'm getting back into watching my filthy morning habit. And lo and behold, there it was. Hey, Joe, glad you're listening to the program. I think that's really cool. How many days ago was it that I mentioned Jonathan Swift's phrase, a confederacy of dunces? Well, lo and behold, somehow or another, old Joe, a brother alumnus of mine of the Capstone down in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you know, in Africa and India, the ivory of the elephants are firmly implanted in their skulls, but in Alabama, the Tuscaloosa. Yeah, I'll go to hell for that one. Yeah, but there he was. Yep. Making an argument today that included the use of something that I got to, three, 4 days ago. Could it be simply a coincidence? Of course it could be a simply coincidence. And correlation is not causation. But still, I'll be damned. There it was. A Confederacy of Dunces reference from the multimillionaire in the morning. When I made the reference, maybe Friday-ish? Or was it yesterday? Honest to God, it all runs together after a while, and sometimes it's difficult to recall. I'm looking for it now. And I have to refine the search a little bit. Let's look for it that way.
Working.
Yeah, there it is. I knew I didn't hallucinate it. Yeah, just for the humor value, check it out. Well, the humor and the humor value and the value of tattered and musty purple robe with the frayed appliqué moons and stars and will thee kiss me and the baby written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front of it, you know, for that, too.
Analyst Eugene Robinson,
author and former Republican strategist.
Yeah. Okay, there's the intro. And let's do Mika. Here we go. Maybe this is it.
Team of I don't know what, Joe.
Well, I mean, he had a confederacy of dunces defending him in impeachment. Their arguments were absolutely stunning. Let's start with.
Yep, there it is. I just whisper it into the ear of the universe here, and the universe it does with it what it pleases. But still, it's awfully damned interesting. And in a way, I've learned to be careful with this because it's not just me. It's Agnes, too. Oh, yeah, it's Agnes. I wonder, can you hear me through the wall, dear? I don't know. Maybe she's in the living room of the mansion with Ferg. He had his guitar out and was noodling a little bit. So, on Sunday, as I toddled homeward, I had, the route goes basically US 43 from Florence to Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, up past Lawrenceburg to Columbia, Tennessee, and then you get on, then you go up through Spring Hill and get on Saturn Parkway, and that kicks you onto I-65. And you take I-65 north through Nashville, up through Bowling Green, Cave City to Elizabethtown. You get on the Bluegrass Parkway to Versailles, Kentucky, wander around the New Circle Road and all of that stuff, and then you get on I-64 eastbound into the hills of Appalachia. You pass a castle and some horse farms and things like that. And then once you're east of Lexington on I-64, you're going through places, Winchester and Vanceburg, Olive Hill, that place is like. And so somewhere around Winchester-ish, and because it is now seared in my memory, well, I was on the phone with Agnes. We often chat while I'm driving. It's when I can't have her in the seat next to me, having her on the Bluetooth hands-free is the next best thing, although it is a far cry from being anything resembling the same thing. But at about, I think, mile marker 88.6, I'm driving along, I'm doing a nice 75 miles an hour, cruise control, paying attention. It's such a good thing I was paying attention. And Agnes and I were just chatting. And all of a sudden I yelled, "Jesus Christ!" No, it wasn't Jesus Christ. It was a sofa. I shit you not. It was a sofa, a navy blue sofa. I would say more like a love seat or part of a sectional. And I was in the middle lane of three lanes of I-64 eastbound. And it was right there in front of me. And you know how that split second stuff goes. Quick blink into the mirror to make sure I wasn't going to be, going into the side of anybody. There was somebody not too close behind me, but I whipped it hard to starboard and got around it. And so Agnes, meanwhile, is sort of freaking out a little bit, going, what, baby, what, honey, what is it? You okay? And I think my next words were, "Fuck me, there's a sofa in the road." Now, in West Virginia, it's not a big deal. I mean, things get in the middle of the road, but usually it's one of our two-lane winding back roads kind of things. This was just flat highway. But somebody had lost a sofa. And so I said, "Honey, there was a sofa in the road. And instead of answering, a what? Or, are you okay? Did you hit it? My lovely wife's response is, what color was it? Kind of like when Tracy told us about the new ride, my first question was, what color is it? I told her, so it was blue, navy blue. What's my lovely wife's response? Damn it, I got to be more careful. And then she texts me with a date, with a timestamp on it, a photo of a blue sofa that she was looking at online, thinking it would look right nice in our living room. And it was about a minute before I dodged the blue sofa in the middle of the road, and I said, stop throwing furniture at me, woman. She said, I wasn't trying to throw furniture at you. I just really want a new couch. I'm not responsible for how the universe responds to things like that. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. So, you know, not just me, not just her, not just us, but generally, just be careful what you whisper into the ears of the universe. We're not talking about any gods or deities, just the great flow of energy back and forth from the minds of you. And for those who want a denouement to this whole weird little account, understand that there were no big semis or flatbeds or pickup trucks or cars or anything for a good ways out in front of that sofa.
Now, Bob, are you telling on me?
I'm just...
I'll cowbell you, buddy.
That's the road cowbell.
Yeah, I'll road you. Quit telling people about my sofa dreams.
But there was nothing out in front. And so I did what I thought was the responsible thing. I dialed 911 real quick, and the 911 dispatch operator answered, 911, what's your emergency? Because it's Kentucky. I said, ma'am, about the 88.6 mile marker on I-64 eastbound, there's a sofa in the middle of the road, in the middle lane of a six-lane highway. Yeah, it's a couch. What color is it? No, she did not say that. I couldn't have handled it if she'd said that. No, she was totally professional and nonchalant about it and said, all right, I'll get the state road right out there. I said, thank you, because somebody's liable to hit that and it's going to be bad. Fortunately, there was, you know, enough of a field of vision, and it was so dark, it looked like it might be a piece of cardboard or something like that, and you just had to get right up on top of it, and you went, fuck, that's a sofa! So, I guess they got, and it took me, I had to get all the way into Round County. You remember, home of Sister Clerk Kim Davis? I got all the way up past Vanceburg and Olive Hill and was on my way to Moorhead. Not like that, perverts. Quit it. And I finally came up on a pickup truck, Kentucky plates, of course. And it was just a pickup truck. It wasn't a flatbed or a hauling truck or a truck from... one of those furniture rental companies, or it was just a pickup truck, but it made perfect sense. It was one of those four-door pickup trucks with a very short bed. And in the back of this pickup truck, completely obscuring the rear glass, the rear window, was a refrigerator, an big upright freezer on the top refrigerator. And there, as I went back, and he had his flashers on, and he was going slow, so he knew he was kind of heavy loaded. And he had no idea he'd lost a couch. And the space in that small box pickup truck was, the remaining space was narrow enough that he probably had it sort of propped, wedged in on one side with part of it dangling over. And you could see the wind, you could imagine the winds catching it and just kaboom. And he never knew it. And I felt really bad about the guy. I didn't have a big sketch pad or anything that I could, or a big Sharpie that said, "Did you lose a couch? Call State Road." No, I didn't have that, so I just had to go on past, and Agnes was back on the phone with me by then, and she said, "You get on around him, Bob. He's a menace on the highway." And so I did. But just the thought of him getting where he's going, "Where's my goddamn couch?" Now, the ultimate irony would be if he was on his way to deliver it to Sister Clerk Kim Davis, but I won't take the universe that far. But it took me all the way from Winchester to Moorhead to pretty much get... it was Vanceburg and Olive Hill. Because I was hungry by then, and I pulled into a Steak and Shake, and the young woman who took my order, I said, "I just dodged a couch in the middle of the highway. I'm not all right." She said, "Damn." And then asked me where I was going. I said, "West Virginia." She said, "I was in West Virginia. Spent 3 years there. Brewston Mills. You know where it is? That's federal prison. I spent 3 years in federal prison." Because, well, of course. And proceeded to tell me her story of how meth landed her in a federal prison in Brewston Mills, West Virginia. And how she's in recovery. And I praised her for her recovery and wished her the best of luck going forward. And I got my Steak and Shake burger. And I got back on the road, and it was shortly thereafter, once I got into Round County, that's R-O-W-A-N for those of you plotting it on the map, caught up with the dude. Agnes's other response, "I told you we should have gotten an SUV instead of that little sedan. You could have stopped and picked it up and brought it home to me." "Still there, dear?" Yeah. But that's, that was Sunday, and it's yesterday. We got through a program yesterday, and we're into Titanic Tuesday today. Haven't seen the sun, and that was the other thing. In Kentucky, it was bright blue skies, high, white, fluffy, puffy clouds. I crossed the Big Sandy River into West Virginia, and it was straight out of Shakespeare, and the clouds had lowered upon our housetops. And we have not seen the sun since, and there is no hope of seeing it probably for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 days. Whew, it's rough, I tell you, rough. And I'm back to thinking that maybe I'll replace it. No, I'm not going to do it. You guys already warned me against putting a grow light in the light socket here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. No, I'm not going to. Damn. Maybe that's why Nitwit Nero gets in the tanning bed, because he just gets all bummed out if he doesn't. Darlene in Connecticut, "That's a goddamn big hint, Bob. Better get that blue sofa for Agnes. I'm working on it. I mean, that's why the fundraising goal is at $390. Get that woman a blue sofa. Steve in New York, that's the subject line, the sofa. It's Newton's third law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And sometimes a sofa. Funny how that didn't make it into Newton's final manuscript. Megan says, Bob, be careful. I've heard too many scary stories of people leaving stuff out in the road in order to get drivers to stop, get out, and move it. They do it to you to rob and kidnap them. Well, yeah, I could see that. I could see that on like a little, you know, shabby little two-lane road in West Virginia, but not in the middle of the interstate. Because, you know, they'd probably get hit too. Ron and Raleigh, with a good classic TV Land reference, missed it by that much. Oh, Ron, you're going to hell. See you there, I mean, but, hey, Bob, you didn't hit it, so I say, so far, so good. That's why the cowbell. I can always count on y'all. Always. So that's just been part of the whole recovery process, and slowly but surely unloading the little Ford. Dragging out bits and pieces as need be. Broadcasting to you live on a still cabbaged together streaming system. With any luck at all, I'll try to get across and maybe see if I can get a power supply and maybe get the other computer back in line yet. Who knows? But, you know, that's just the kind of, you know, it's just another day in my life. Kyle, says, oh fuck, please no more math. My head already hurts from listening to the Republicans. And Lady B, you're assuming that these assholes are actually capable of caring about anyone but themselves. But the motto for how they think is simple. Igum foo. I got mine. Look at you. And, Kyle, further, quote, fuck me, there's a sofa in the road. Alex, what is a sentence you'll only hear in a maggot state? Oh, I like to, come on, let's not be, we don't have to be so hard all the time, Kyle. I like to think that sofas fall off the backs of trucks in places like Massachusetts, California, Oregon, Washington, Minnesota, New York. New Jersey? But, yeah, it felt real. And the fact that the 911 dispatch lady didn't go, a couch? Really, a couch? I'll just get the state road. It made me think that there's probably some warehouse somewhere in eastern Kentucky where they've got a whole shit ton of sofas stacked up. I mean, the thing could probably be rehabbed. I mean, it had to, you know, it bounced off of that pickup truck and landed on the concrete slab of the interstate, probably about 40 miles an hour. So, you know, it hit that slab, but it must have been fairly well made because it didn't fall all to pieces. You never know. No. But between that and I wake up this morning and there's Joe Scarborough making a Confederacy of Dunces reference, and you think that either somebody's out there paying attention or maybe the universe just likes my choice of literary allusions. I don't know. But it's kind of pleasant, I must confess, to be able to sit here and conversate without feeling like I was missing some vital portion of the impeachment cover up, because they ran out of gas. And the most fascinating thing about from Saturday to yesterday to today is that they never challenged the actual events. They never said none of this happened.
they admitted it. And having admitted it, said, yeah, but what the fuck? I mean, just let him do it. It doesn't matter. He's Trump. He's the God Emperor. The Constitution doesn't apply to him. This is not what you would call a rousing defense. In fact, it was the defense that they were told to mount by their nightmare client from hell. Because that's what Donald Trump is. Any lawyer that he's ever hired has had to have come away going, this guy's impossible. Oh, look, Steve in New York serving as the Horn ad hoc research department this evening. Why, yes, it does happen in California. Chula Vista, California multi-vehicle crash on the 805 freeway after sofa falls off truck. Well, it was merciful, I suppose, that traffic wasn't, you know, California-style heavy when this happened. Eesh. I don't even want to think about it. So now, as far as impeachment is concerned, what comes next is the question phase. And a little tidbit that I noted last night. Truly, this charade is an exercise in absurdism, like, you know, sofas on highways. Because we've all been thinking, okay, sooner or later they're going to have a vote on whether to call witnesses. Uh-uh. No. I thought that, and I was wrong, and if you thought that, you would be wrong. Turns out the next step after the question phase, which is 16 hours of questions from the various senators, which have to be submitted in writing, which means that it's going to be kind of hard to do new questions on the fly, because after all, this Senate cover-up is not designed to get at the truth or even the facts. It's a sham. It's a show. But no, after the question period, there will be consideration, and just wait for it, and if you feel the need for the hockey puck, go ahead and chomp down, because it kind of made me want to hoot like a barn owl. If you want to talk about stylized bullshit, this is that. Because they are going to ponder the question, the august body of the United States Senate, the world's greatest debating society, the world's most exclusive club. The Senate of the United States will take up the question of whether to think about calling witnesses. No, really. Ponder that. Meditate upon it, upon the absurdity of it. Instead of just asking, okay, shall we call witnesses, they're going to first entertain a question being, shall we entertain a question as to whether to call witnesses? This thing has so many booby traps built into it. And after all, there are 53 boobies in the, and I don't mean in the breastesis kind of connotation, I mean as in the twit connotation. There are 53 boobies in the Senate of the United States, and I'm sure they will get completely hung up on that first issue. Shall we entertain a question to call witnesses? And this will require hours of fucking debate. Wish I was kidding. Not. a motion to consider whether to consider calling witnesses. And it'll have to have a second. And then there'll have to be discussion. At which point, no member of the United States Senate will begin any sentence appropriately, I might add, with, "Well, this just beats cat's fucking." Or, "My goodness gracious, what utterly absurd and silly procedures we have in this body when it is run by the likes of Moscow Mitch McConnell." How I wish I was joking. But I'm not. So that's somewhere in the offing this week. And if the debate takes place during the time when we gather together between 5 and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 and 5 Pacific, then I'm sure that we will get to participate in some of the, or at least vicariously participate in some of the madness. This too. I did my civic duty today, and I dialed the Capitol switchboard, which, if you don't have it committed to memory, is area code 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. I performed my civic duty, and I dialed that number, and it's all automated. And if you want to reach the Senate, press 1 or say 1. If you wish to reach the House of Representatives, press 2 or say 2. And then I wanted to reach the Senate, so I pressed 1, and it said, state you are from, or else give your zip code. Well, it was just easier to put in the zip code. And then they said, press 1 for Joe Manchin III, press 2 for Shelley Moore Capito. So I pressed 1. And I got a pleasant young voice on the other end of the line. "Thank you for calling the office of Senator Joe Manchin. How may I help you?" And hoping to brighten the soul's day, I said, "Good afternoon. It's a great day to be a West Virginian. Hi, my name's Bob. And I'm calling from," and gave her, right, because they like to have an address and a phone number and all that stuff. And I said, "I just wanted to let the senator know, if it wouldn't be too much trouble to you, that as a constituent, I consider it absolutely necessary that witnesses be called in the impeachment trial in the Senate." And she said, "Thank you. I will make sure that he gets that message. And just for your information, Senator Manchin is still of the opinion that this proceeding should require witnesses." Well, that little bit is kind of newsish. So, thus far, at least on that issue, Joe Manchin is still planning on voting like a Democrat, which is refreshing. Which means that Joe Manchin will be a yes vote on the question of whether to have a question about calling witnesses. And that, well, that's about as much as I could hope for at this point. But I have two senators. The other one, of course, is Shelley Moore Capito, the daughter of the single most corrupt politician the state of West Virginia has ever known. She learned everything she knows at her daddy's knee. And so I then went through the whole process again, 202-221, 3124, pressed 1 again, put in the zip code, and this time I pressed 2 for Shelley Moore Capito. There was no chipper, lively young voice at the other end of the line for this. No, there was nothing but voicemail. Because Shelley Moore Capito is, of course, a die-hard maggot. And she doesn't want to hear from any of her constituents who would like for her to honor the Constitution instead of abasing herself before Nitwit Nero. So in that case, I had to go through the litany again, only leaving a recording and hoping that it might get through, although the chant, you know, once they turn on the voicemail, it's a pretty much sure thing that they don't want to hear from anybody. I'd be curious to know from members of the Horn Family Community Congregation what it's like when you go through that rigmarole in your state. Let's say you're in, Talibandiana, and you call Senator Mike Brown's office. Do you get voicemail or a human being? Mike Brown being a Republican and all. On the other hand, what if you're in California? Do you get voicemail for DiFi and Senator Harris? How about Wyden and Murkowski in Oregon? Not Murkowski. Markey. Weidman and Markey in Oregon. I bet you get voicemail for Murkowski in Alaska. But I don't know how many members of the Horn Family Community Congregation we have in Alaska to find that out from. I wonder about Doug Jones in Alabama. Wonder if you get a human being there. But I have to give credit where it is due, and I give Joe Manchin no small amount of hell. Well deserved, mind you. But as far as actually doing a creditable job of pretending that he gives a good goddamn about what his constituents think, I got to give him positive marks on that. Because he did a good, you know, he's obviously trained his staff well, or his chief of staff has trained his staff well. Yeah, what's that, Kyle in Kentucky, Stan? Wow, Joe Manchin not kissing up to the orange asshole completely? Is he feeling okay? At least his office spokesperson actually speaks to constituents, though. Exactly, this is exactly what I meant. Precisely. Steve in New York says, I know I'm really going out on a limb here. Do you think it's possible that Senator Charles Schumer, D. Wall Street, is actually keeping the caucus together on witnesses? Well, if Joe's there, then yeah. Joe has competition now in the Democratic caucus. Because Kyrsten Sinema out in Arizona has proven herself to be a member of the Joe Manchin Seeking Balance fan club. So I don't know if she's in the fold or not. Mike in Cascadia says, Washington senators, with Maria Cantwell, it's always a person. Patty Murray, always a machine. Local Seattle offices, always a human being for both. Also, our Representative Rick Larson always has a human being. All my federal Congress critters are Democrats, and my governor, and my state rep, and senator, and mayor. Yes, that's why. That's why it was such a bummer that one of the first people run out of the Democratic Democratic candidate cavalcade was your governor. Because the man actually had the skill set to be president of the United States. And he had a record he could run on, because Washington State has a real live, no kidding, progressive agenda state government, and it is working gangbusters for the people of Washington. Heaven forfend we would actually want someone with executive experience being a governor, doing something like carrying the banner of the Democratic Party into the election. Oh, well, at least some of the candidates are have wholeheartedly embraced some of the policy positions that Jay Inslee was advocating. What's that? Sorry to disappoint, Bob, Megan writes. I live in Virginia now, but when I lived in Delaware, I had all my representatives on speed dial and very rarely got voicemail. That was reserved for after office hours or during serious votes when the reps were in the gallery. Yeah. I don't know. So you're in Virginia now? Have you called? I don't think there's a lot to worry about with Warner and Kane, but it's always good to remind them that you're paying attention. But Joe's one to worry about. So if he's a yes vote on the question of should we have a question about calling witnesses, and then he's a yes vote on calling witnesses if we... Because, see, that's the reason that the reason I mentioned that absurdity is that those are two flaming barbed wire hoops that the Senate has to... Those are two instances in which you've got to scrounge up four Republican votes if everybody else is in the fold. You have to get those four unicorns to vote with the Democrats on the question of whether or not to have a question about calling witnesses, and then you got to keep them for the question of calling witnesses. Twice is always more difficult than once. It's kind of like that my favorite baseball trivia question. You can win yourself a beer at the end of the bar on it if you can get in, if there's any old timers who really, really love their baseball. What is the least likely record ever to be broken in baseball? And no, it's not Cal Ripken who beat the Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak. And no, it's not Joe DiMaggio's consecutive games with a hit streak. The hardest record in baseball to break is the matter of consecutive no-hitters. Baseball had been around for quite a while when Johnny Vandermeer, an otherwise pretty much nondescript pitcher for the Reds, took the mound and threw a no-hitter. And then on his very next start, he did it again. Now, it is conceivable that someone might tie that. But the odds against anyone ever throwing three consecutive no-hitters and breaking that record are astronomical. See, like me, Steve in New York was raised a Reds fan, and he knew the minute before the question was even out, he was typing to me, Johnny Vandermeer, two consecutive no-hitters. Bingo. And so, you know, getting past the first question and then getting past the second question and having to rely on people like Susan Collins or Bishop Willard . Well, now, and of course, there's the talk. I heard it again this morning. It was Chuck Todd because they kind of moved Stephanie Ruhle out of the 9 a.m. slot Eastern time on MSNBC. And so there sits Chuck Todd blathering away about how, well, you know, Senator Lamar Alexander's got an independent streak and he's not facing the voters for re-election. So, you know, maybe he'll vote. He'll vote for witnesses. Well, he hasn't given any indication along those lines. Neither is Mike Enzi or Pat of Wyoming or Pat Roberts of Kansas. They're all out of there. And once again, I will, because this is one of those moments with the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always says answer hazy, ask again later. Where I remind our happy little community that the reason none of these maggot senators want to be caught voting in favor of calling witnesses is one of, if not the most simple and primal human emotions. Fear. They're afraid. Because, see, since the late 70s or so, the Republican Party, utterly desperate for a constituency to keep them in power, has reached out to every weirdo right-leaning gang of goobers and thugs that they can find in order to cobble together a base. And that means having empowered and stroked and petted the gun fetishists for something going on 2+ generations. And I've explained it on this program before, but it bears reiterating. They've gotten on the back of the tiger, and they've grabbed hold of ears and tails. And at that point in time, all you can do is hang on and scream. There's not much else you can do. So, having spent 2 generations telling gun freaks in this country about how they've got to keep their guns so they can protect democracy, well, now, they are entirely reliant upon people like that. And people like that tend to view those who go against authoritarian schemes, because they themselves are authoritarians in their own right, they're the followers, not the leaders. Well, they hate the gun humpers, they hate us. Okay? Let's be clear. They hate us. They despise us, they loathe us. But it is almost impossible to give full voice to find a word foul enough to describe how they would feel about anyone in their flock who decided to buck the God Emperor. And so they would be more inclined, I think, to squeeze off a round or two at a Republican who voted to call witnesses when they have been told, and that being authoritarian followers, they do as they are told. When they've been told that there can't be any witnesses, that the God Emperor doesn't want any witnesses, that the authoritarian dear leader says there must be no witnesses, they would view anyone who said otherwise, who came from the GOP, as being a betrayer on the level of Judas Iscariot. And you know what you do with betrayers. Well, I mean, at least according to the Gospels, Judas did it to himself, but there was probably an angry mob ready to help him along the way. Wouldn't that be a funny hashtag? Judas didn't kill himself. Jesus. And so as you watch the hand-wringing calculus that attends this question of whether or not, and you know, at this point in time, while there are a slew of witnesses that could and should be heard from, but apparently Bolton is, you know, Bolton's the focus now. Because, among other things, he is reported earlier today, I saw Sparky make mention of the story. According to an article in Vanity Fair by the reporter Gabriel Sherman, who is quite good at what he does, Gabriel Sherman has been speaking to people who have told him in turn that in talking to Republican donors with whom he has a long association, because Bolton's been out there trying to start wars and slaughter brown people for a long time, and that plays real big with your gazillionaire Republican donors because they're all tied in with the defense industry and the weapons of war industry, and, well, war's good business. He's been telling the Republican big-time donors that he knows, Bolton has, that Nitwit Nero is, and this comes with quotation marks, mentally unstable. And more particularly, Bolton says he's worried that if he gets a second term, Tangerine Tiberius will completely pull the United States out of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. And this is in addition, of course, to things that Bolton is reported to have said previously about Venerial Vespasian and his intelligence on a general basis. I do offer a caveat to the whole Bolton, you know, save us, John Bolton, you're our only hope. Cacophony that's out there, because he's still a Republican. And as such, he has, you know, he has a noxious history. And My magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always says answer hazy ask again later does occasionally cause a small disturbance in the force that makes me wonder if we're being set up, that if Bolton is the big deal, if we buy into this idea of Bolton is the big deal and then Bolton comes on and testifies, how are we going to feel if he looks up and says, oh no, everything's cool, I love Donald Trump, glad he gave me the job, I just had to go after a while. No, no, what he did was perfectly fine. Hunky-dory. Can you imagine a Republican being that perfidious? Because, see, I can. For a fact, I can. Nonetheless, according to Gabriel Sherman over at Vanity Fair, the maggots are moving from one fallback trench to another, because now if it turns out that Bolton is called, Sherman reports that they're going to go all out scorched earth on him, probably say mean things about his mustache and shit like that. In the Vanity Fair piece, Sherman reports Pompeo and Bolton were at war with each other during the administration. Pompeo thought that Bolton was constantly trying to undercut him and the president. However, on the other side of the coin, Sherman reports that a Republican tells Gabriel Sherman that Moscow Mitch is resigned to the fact that there will be witnesses. But this caveat, even if there are witnesses, no guarantee that we, the people, get to hear them testify. it could very well be a matter of doing a video deposition of him and then in closed session playing the video deposition for the members of the Senate of the United States. So just, you know, some things to keep in mind and ponder as we watch all of these maneuverings take place. What's that, Kyle? Kyle says, I think Bolton would actually take down Trump for not for a sense of duty to country or constitution, but to get him back for firing him publicly by tweet. That's how these fuckers operate. But it wouldn't be, I don't disagree, Kyle, but it wouldn't be a takedown. Because there are not and will not be 67 votes to convict. And the other part of McConnell's ongoing evil plan is that if they decide to call witnesses, then there is a good chance that the circus has arrived in town and subpoenas will fly for Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. And son of a gun, I said it here first, and lo and behold, I've since heard it among the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. Well, let Joe Biden tell him he'll testify when Trump does. Welcome to it. Maybe, you know, when I first started all of this and we came up with a name for the program, it was going to be Head On, because that's how we were going to tackle the issues. We weren't going to dance around and triangulate or any of that silly shit. We were just going to take the issues head on and deal with them, and devil take the hindmost. Maybe we should change the name of the program to Ahead of the Curve. Or Straight Road. Ahead of the Curve. I don't know. Nah, we'll just leave it be. Darlene in Connecticut says, yeah, I trust John Bolton just about as much as I trust Chief Justice John Roberts. In other words, not. I worry that this is a setup, too. And in light of the fact that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is, in fact, the most brilliantly evil genius in the entire Republican Party, there is reason to be concerned. Subject line, Bolton bullshit. Our buddy Gary, labor man, says, you finally hit the mark on JB. He's a repuke. You're going to sucker the Democrats again. Well, I'm glad I am not alone in my mild paranoia. So we are well over an hour into the program. John's challenge is still on the table. It's still at $190, and we are still at, you know, $10 for the entire beginning of the week, yesterday and today. This is not a good way to run a non-commercial, non-capitalist radio network. So, I don't know, if you haven't kicked in a while, or if you've never kicked in before, welcome to the community. Nobody here ever gets a bill. And it's entirely a goodwill operation. I don't mean like, you know, Goodwill Industries. I mean, everybody can listen to this program, and we'll keep it on the air as long as we possibly can. But it relies on the goodwill of the community to make sure that the program remains free for everybody. Thank you, Alma, for the article. What we talk about when we talk about the Russian mob. Alma says this is as succinct as I've ever seen put in writing, and so far without reading vast amounts of material, which I have. Please understand that what we're experiencing is much more than party affiliation. This is a struggle between the rule of law and no rule of law. It is trying to save democracy itself. Really critical information in this material. I hope you'll all take it as seriously as I do. You can look up online what we talk about when we talk about the Russian mob. I can't read it in real time on the air, but I will have a look after the program is concluded this evening. Ralph's out there, who is the only one who responded yesterday, by the way. Come on, people, don't make me sick Kayla and Tegan on all of you. Well, you don't want that. You don't want that. I mean, I can't guarantee, I would never dream of it, but nobody needs the universe throwing couches in front of them. It's bad enough that in Morgantown we burn them. When we get down to the point where the universe is tossing them out of the back of pickup trucks, it gets worrisome. Steve in New York says, along Kyle's thought process, the only thing that is stronger than hatred and bigotry in people like Bolton is vindictiveness and revenge. He wants to screw Trump for dissing him. I know you'll think I've been sniffing unicorn farts, but I think that Bolton could be the thing that leads to conviction and removal, just my political spidey sense. I think he could wind up being a witness, and I'd like to hope that I'm wrong about it all just being a subtle facade. But I don't see a way to 67 votes, Steve. Now, bear in mind, the rule says 2/3 of the senators present. If there was some way to get a vote with maybe a whole bunch of the Senate out with the galloping Wuhans, that might be a different thing. You know, say 30 or 40 Republicans. Might be possible to bring some folks along. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, the Senate maggots will likely avoid a Biden subpoena until he secures the nomination. Well, that's going to take a while, especially if the numbers remain like they are in Iowa and New Hampshire. The only place where Biden is relatively secure is in good old South Carolina. You know, the state that is never, ever, 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 ever going to give its Electoral College votes to the Democrats. So naturally, we let South Carolina have a hand in declaring which candidate is and is not viable. I think it would make a hell of a lot more sense from a diversity standpoint to replace South Carolina with Maryland, maybe Illinois, something like that. Or, hey, California. Steve adds, it strikes me that the maggots make the Birchers look like the Communist Party apparatchiks. Well, kind of, yeah, but you have to understand, Steve, the maggots are the Birchers. The Birchers turned into the hardcore supporters of Nixon, Ford, Reagan. Later on, they became the wavers of the urine-colored snake flag. You know, the teabaggers. And then they just naturally morphed into the maggots. Awesome. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for jumping in alongside Ralph's this week. That's tremendous. So we got $180 to go on John's challenge. That would thank you very much indeed. Well, gosh, Kyle. Yeah, and here I am fresh out of rot gut tequila and swirly straws. Kyle says, Bob, you need to stop talking sense about elections and voting. I know. Yeah, I realize that. Sparky pointing out 70% of all voters in the U.S. want witnesses. And little froggies want wings, so they won't bump their little green butts when they hop, too. But that doesn't matter to the Senate of the United States either, because the Republican majority of the Senate represents about maybe that 33% or so of hardcore maggots. That's why things are like they are. Compare the number of people that, and you know, that Moscow Mitch represents. Compare that number to the number of people that, say, Kamala Harris represents. Or the number of people that, Ed Markey or Elizabeth Warren represent. And that's how you can have a Senate that can refuse to get anything done, even though the vast majority of the American populace wants them to get shit done. And so, sorry, I'm looking for a clip now. I mean, consider for a moment. Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi. He don't see no point to that Bolton fella testimonying. It don't make sense. Yeah.
I don't think the testimony of Ambassador Bolton would be helpful, because I basically think, in agreement with the very scholarly approach that Mr. Dershowitz gave, that there's...
You got that? Senator Roger Wicker, who represents as a senator from Mississippi, Senator Roger Wicker, he represents about a 30th of the number of people that say Senator Kamala Harris represents, and his vote counts more because, of course, he's an old white man, and he don't think that he thinks Alan Dershowitz presented a masterful argument last night. Of course, if Alan Dershowitz had got up and gone through his spank bank and thrown and shown pictures of little 12-year-old girls, that would have been a masterful defense of President Trump, as far as Roger Wicker of Mississippi is concerned.
It's grounds for impeachment. Do I agree with everything every president has done? No. Does that include this president? Yes. My voting record is something like 92-point-something% in support of one of President Trump's positions. But the question is not whether I think a phone call was perfect or...
No. No, the question is not whether I think the phone call was perfect. The question is whether I think that Chewbacca actually wants to live on Endor with them little 2.5-foot-tall Ewoks. It don't make sense. Meanwhile, And this came out, just landed my email box as a breaking news alert from the multimillionaires at the New York Times. Someone is reporting to someone reporting for the New York Times that at present, Moscow Mitch says he does not have the votes to block a call for witnesses. But the important part is what comes next. He says that he and the Republican maggot leadership team are optimistic that they're going to end up with the votes they need to stop witnesses from being heard by the end of the week. And so they're euphemistically reported in this New York Times story by Nicholas Fandos. They are euphemistically reporting that Moscow Mitch is trying to create pressure on wavering senators to join with a majority of their colleagues. Now get in line and stop this here foolishness. Get in line. You don't want to. You don't want to be joining with them demoncrats, do you? How you ever gonna get reelected when you vote with the demoncrats? Fuck that old Constitution. Don't you remember what George W. Bush done said about it? It's just a goddamn piece of paper. You know, because he did. Yeah, a note from Brother Deacon Asa. Let me complete Roger Wicker's sentence, which for some reason he left incomplete. I don't think Ambassador Bolton's testimony will be helpful to our illegal cover-up. Ta-da! Yep. Also, Bob, you haven't mentioned Trump's absolutely lead pipe cinch perfect plan for peace in the Middle East. What are you trying to hide from us, and why? Well, no, I haven't. I freely confess that. That's on me. I did have a note from Ron and Raleigh at the beginning of the program, however. And we can double back to it. Ron writes, peace plan? I'm beside myself after having read about the particulars of this bullshit Middle East peace plan. I need someone to explain to me how you can have a peace plan where one of the parties involved in the plan is not included in the negotiations. The Palestinians are once again being fucked over by the U.S. We are not an honest broker in this by any means. The 800-pound gorilla in this mess is Dolt 45, who's unilaterally given the rest of the West Bank to Israel. I've linked to an article on Al Jazeera in which you can read the particulars of 50-plus years of land theft by the Israeli government done with the collusion of the U.S. It almost makes one understand the hatred of Israel. There can be no peace between Israel and the Palestinians with the U.S. thumb on the scales. Well, I saw that map. In fact, Nitwit Nero tweeted it, and apparently somebody translated his ignorant tweet into Arabic, saying that he was bringing peace to the Middle East. Yeah, no. And my first thought, I didn't follow through on it, was, yeah, now show us a picture of the partition in 1948. And by the way, under this plan, Israel would control ingress and egress out of occupied Palestine. The Palestinians would have no control whatsoever over their own fate, their own destiny, or their own country. They would have no access to the outside world that Israel didn't control. And that's all just reality. That's not Bruga Bruga Israel. Those are just the nuts and bolts of this crazy-ass plan. And to be entirely fair, this is also not entirely on Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump is just perpetuating what has been Republican policy, namely a policy of looking the other way while the Palestinians slowly have a genocide run on them, so that one day that Israel can declare peace because there won't be any more Palestinians. After all, you've got Israelis who think that Palestinians don't exist in the first place, and enablers here in the United States who agree with that assessment, namely that there is no such thing as a Palestinian. Yeah. Hey, Libby, thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed. That means we are now down to 165 to meet John's challenge. Thank you, Libby. Thank you. Thanks a ton. Maybe Ralphs and Libby and Glenn can get some company. We'll get that knocked all the way out, and maybe we'll finish the evening even for fundraising if we can meet meet John's challenge. Thank you. Now, I'm going to take a break in a minute. We got the Green News Report this evening. But there is a massive degree of maggot butthurt out there today. Mike in Cascadia just reminded me of it. And I really would appreciate it if people, I live in a maggot state. I probably have a little bit more nuanced perspective on what real live mouth walking, knuckle breathing maggots are like. Nonetheless, over on CNN this past weekend, Saturday it was, Don Lemon had Wajahat Ali from the New York Times and Rick Wilson on to discuss the whole business of Mike Pompeo. You know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. God, that always just kicked, it just cracks me up. And the way that he the way that he verbally assaulted Mary Louise Kelly from NPR. And what transpired has created a firestorm of pearl-clutching, hand-wringing, and toenail-chewing among the maggots. And over here on our side, the concern trolls have come out. Solenoid O'Brien, for instance. She said, "I don't think this should ever have appeared in a news broadcast." And another individual said, "You know, we can't win. We can't beat Trump by making fun of his supporters and his followers." Yes, we can. Yes, we can. The only way you think that we can't beat Trump by making fun of his the worst of his supporters is if you think that somehow or another we have to bring them into the tent in order to win. We kind of touched on this topic last night in terms of whether or not we should be ballyhooing the arrival of Joe Rogan into the Sanders camp, or whether the LGBTQ community, which was outraged by it, and the community of color, which was outraged by it, whether we should stand with them, who stood with us, and with whom we have stood. So here's the clip. I warn you, it's funny. It's also accurate. And so I guess that means that the pearl clutchers and the hand wringers sort of pull their you know, sweater collars up over their faces and kind of laugh down their sleeves, because it's real. That's the bottom line. It's real.
And obviously it's false. And look, he also knows deep in his heart that Donald Trump couldn't find Ukraine on a map if you had the letter U and a picture of an actual physical crane next to it. He knows that this is, you know, an administration defined by ignorance of the world. And so that's partly him playing to their base and playing to their audience.
Just for the record, the snorting there is Don Lemon, the host at CNN, laughing at what Rick Wilson says. And it's funny, because it's true. Is there anybody in America that thinks Donald Trump could find Ukraine on a map? Especially if they brought out that special Mike Pompeo, graduated first in his class at West Point. What a knee slapper. If you brought out Mike Pompeo's special map with no names on it, I just had a look at a map with no name, and I couldn't find, and I couldn't for the life of me identify Ukraine on that map. It caused me some pain. No, singing. You get singing with this program when we don't respond to challenges from nice people who do who offer to double an entire day's worth of fundraising. Don't make me sing.
You know, the credulous boomer rube demo that backs Donald Trump. The
credulous boomer rube. How's that not like a retro punk band name already?
Wants to think that Donald Trump's a smart one, and there, y'all elitists are dumb.
you elitist.
And see, that's especially what pissed him off. Precious little I wank of my daddy Trump, Kushner. She said, see, that's what they really think of you, those elites. They think, and they do funny voices about how you talk because you talk that way. It's just terrible. It was not a great moment for precious princess I wank of my daddy Trump, Kushner. The internet kind of savaged her pretty good.
You consistently make fun of half the country and then complain that it is divided. The arrogance, mocking accents, and smug ridicule of this nation's real elites is disgusting.
Oh, Ivanka, call Gwyneth and get a fucking jade egg, will you? And of course, she's describing people who showed up at her daddy's Klan rallies wearing Trump 2016, fuck your feelings t-shirts. I mean, they're out there. Mm-hmm. So anyway, back to the audio. The next voice you hear will be Wajahat Ali.
This with your geography and your maps and your spelling, even though my
you with your geography and your maps and your spelling and your flushing and your wiping and all your highfalutin plumbing
reading.
Yeah, you're reading, you know, your geography, knowing other countries, sipping your latte,
all those lines on the map.
Only them elitists know where Ukraine is.
Sorry, I apologize.
Oh my God!
But you know what? But it was Rick's fault. I blame Rick.
Oh my God.
But, you know, but in all honesty, but all,
blame
you know what
Rick.
NPR should do.
Why not? Sorry, hold on. Wait.
Can I tell
give
you
me a second? Hold on. Sorry. That was good. Sorry, Rick. That was a good one. I needed that. Okay, so listen.
Okay.
And now Maggot World is absolutely aflame with butt-hurtedness. No, I can't do that, Billable Rick. Billable Rick says, time for the heavy guns. I think it's time for you to pull out the Pat Boone heavy metal to spur fundraising. Do you agree? No, I don't have the strength for it. I'm two days back into West Virginia. I can't just yet. No. Yes, well, I certainly try. Shorty in L.A., OMG, you are that fly on my wall. I lost it at West Point grad. Good. I'm glad somebody else gets a giggle out of that besides me. Yeah, it works. It works well. See how much fun the program can be when we don't have to bounce over to the impeachment sham trial all the time. Yeah, I'm sorry. I got on the wrong side of Todd in South Carolina. I am unable to nourish myself as you defame our esteemed political leaders. Vomiting while eating is cumbersome. Yeah. Ah, maggot butthurt. Megan reminds us, hey, don't forget the Trump That Bitch campaign T-shirt. Yeah, there was that too. Hey, we'd run out of time. Eventually, we would just. There's not enough time. No, that will not serve as an inducement billable. If you play Pat Boone, I'll send you some rot gut tequila with two swirly straws. Not gonna fall for it. Nope, just not gonna. And besides, it's the dead of winter here. We're not in tequila season. This is pickleback season, Rick. Dang it. I thought I'd done had you larned up on the seasonal nature of that sort of thing. You with your reading and your writing and your flushing and your wiping and your plumbing. Yeah. So here we are just a little ways past halfway into the program. Take a little break and then come back for some conversation radio. I've been remiss in running Brad and Desi. No, let's not go to Brad and Desi just yet. Let's go over to the phones. Scott's been hanging on hold for a long time, and running Brad and Desi first would just be rude. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Pretty good. Let me jiggle a wire here. Better? Hang on. Talk.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, you're
testing?
Good. You're good. You're good.
Okay, good. Hear me okay?
Yeah.
Telephone irking?
Yes.
Microphone?
Yes, it's irking.
Ollie Ballou here. Okay, I want to chime in on the impeachment madness. But first, it is my sad duty to bring the Horn family down a bit. My little friend Chirps the cat died today.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. You and me both, man. She had, in the last, 10 days, maybe a little longer, her appetite had fallen off. And I had noticed for some time before that her weight was falling off, but in the last, better part of a week, she just, refused to eat. I even got her favorite canned salmon food, and she wasn't that old. I mean, she just turned 13, as far as I can tell, because I had adopted her around the middle of 2015, when Michi, my calico, died. And I wasn't going to get a cat. And then I wanted to be around a few cats temporarily. So I went to the shelter. Well, that was probably mistake number one, because I was led into a room with probably 5 dozen cats roaming around of all shapes and sizes and descriptions. And I visited with them and got my cat fix and was going to leave. And the lady said, We have another cat over in this room who has to be separated from the other cat because she doesn't get along. And lo and behold, it was Chirps the cat, who was a roly-poly cat, very heavy, was on special weight loss food and all that stuff. And there wasn't anything outwardly special about her. She wasn't overly friendly or overly standoffish. But the lady who introduced me to Chirps said she's been here about a year. And that struck a chord with me because to be without a home of your own for a year and plus not really get along well with others of your type, I said, well, you know, maybe this is the universe's way of picking her for me and me for her. So I said, I have to, you know, go home and I'll call you about coming back tomorrow because I need to get a ride. And I left the facility and was a half a block away from the shelter when the woman comes running out of this, out into the street after me and says, well, we can have somebody bring her to you on Saturday if you'd like. And I didn't even know that they would offer something like that. And I said, well, yeah, that would actually work out very nicely. So I got my place in readiness for the big day, and the lady came and brought her in a carrier, and she put the carrier down, and then she said, I'll be right back, and she went out to her car, and she got a huge litter box and a thing of litter and a big bag of her special weight loss cat food and a big bunch of cat toys and a cat scratching post, you know, multi-level where she can sit around and laze about or scratch to her heart's content. And just, it was like a multitude of blessings, you know, all delivered to my door, mind you. So that was then, and Punky was still around then, so he didn't know what to make of the new cat in town. But after a while, they got to be, you know, pretty good friends. And I remember when I first moved here a little over, I guess, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, Chirps was on the sofa, just relaxing, the futon, actually, that I had in here then. And Punky flew over and sat on the, you know, the backrest, the back of the, you know, the backrest of the futon. And I guess he didn't dare get much closer than that, you know. But they, you know, they got along pretty well. But then, you know, you remember Punky passed after he had just turned like 21. Chirps, I mean, Michi, the calico, was 20. So it was rather unexpected, because normally my cats and pets live a good long while. And like I say, it was rather sudden. And I'm, you know, you're never prepared for it. I'm telling you. And this makes me wonder if I'm going to ever, I thought about getting another cockatiel after Punky died. And I said, no, I don't think I'll do that. And now I'm at the point where, do I want another cat? Because I love the hellos. The hellos and the first bit is never bad. It's those goddamn goodbyes that kicked my ass around the block. You know?
Absolute truth. And let me just let you know that that my email is with, you know, with what you were saying, my email has suddenly exploded with the expressions of sorrow and grief for your loss from members of the community all over the country.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, people who love their little fur people.
Yeah.
Understand exactly what you're talking about.
And you know, it's very strange, and maybe the full impact hasn't hit me. But you remember, I mean, I shared the passing of Punky with the entire world and the Horn family, and lost it a few times in that long conversation. Because, you know, he was more vocal than Chirps was. You guys never got to hear her much.
Oh, no, she got chatty. I heard her.
Well, at feeding time, when it was time to be fed, goddammit, I don't care who you're talking to, get up off your mangy ass, come in the kitchen, and dish me up some good food, you know, which I inevitably did because I wouldn't hear the end of it if I didn't, you know. But Punky was more of a constant vocal presence, either shrieking his birdie guts out or singing beautifully, you know, or whistling or meowing. That was one of my favorite tricks that he used to do, was meow and say, kitty, 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 which freaked Meechie out. And then when Chirps came along, it freaked her out too, you know. But, you know, I just wanted to pass the word around, because it's at times like this when the love and the caring of a larger community goes a long way to fortifying me. But, you know, and maybe it just hasn't hit me yet, but I was a fucking wreck for months after Punky died.
Oh, yeah.
And it finally subsided.
I mean, for a while there, it was kind of weird when you'd call in and there wasn't a bird in the background.
Oh, I know. And so I don't know. Maybe it's too soon to even contemplate whether I'll have another cat. And we'll see. I mean, you know, we'll just see. You know, the universe will tell me whether I want to engage in that dance or not.
Well, I tend to think that, especially in a situation where one is on one's own.
Yeah,
it's nice to have a buddy around the place. Whether it's a bird or a cat or a fish or, you know.
Yeah.
My buddy Bo has a one of those so-called Siamese fighting fishes.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how solicitous one can get of even a fish.
Yeah.
His fish's name is Hollywood. Because he's
Hollywood.
So, Hollywood the Betta. Because he's so flamboyant, you know, flashing those big bright fins, you know, swimming around in his tank, and you know, Hollywood recognizes Bo. If Bo gets over near the tank, Hollywood runs up to the edge of the tank. Well, he doesn't run; he's a fish. He swims.
Yeah, he swims.
and hangs out and waits to see if Bo's going to come over and say hello to him. Or more than likely, you know, drop some food in. Some of this.
It is
kind of transactional sometimes.
That is the nature of creatures. I have a very special, intense dislike for people who don't appreciate that animals are not lower forms of life. In some ways, they are higher forms of life.
Well, yeah, consider what Mark Twain said. If heaven were achieved by merit and not by grace, our pets would go in and we would stay out.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I mean, think about it. I mean, for instance, you know, presidents and pets. FDR had, what was it, Fala?
Fala, my little dog, Fala.
And Richard Nixon, even Nixon had checkers.
Yeah.
Reagan had some horse.
LBJ had his beagles. You remember he'd lift them up by the ears?
And caused
outrage. Piss everybody off.
There was that chocolate lab that Bill Clinton had, and
didn't they have a cat?
W had that poor little terrier that he dropped on its head. Poor little guy. The Obamas had a Portuguese water dog, and Donald Trump has Lindsey Graham.
Well, there you go. Or as I call him, my new nickname for Lindsey is Aunt Pity Pat.
No, I found an even better one. I found an even better one. Mr. Electrico, they do the Professional Lift podcast. He posted a graphic the other day of Lindsey Graham in the red cloak and the white hat of a handmaid.
Yeah.
Did you watch that series? Have you watched it?
No, I've got it on my list of things to watch, but I've just not gotten around to it.
Well,
because I love the Handmaids, Elizabeth Moss. Yeah.
The Handmaids lose their own identities.
Yeah.
And instead, they get a name. They get the name of their male owner with the preposition of in front of it.
Yeah.
And he has renamed Lindsey Graham because of this graphic of Lindsey's face in the handmaid costume. Lindsey is now of Donald.
Oh, yeah, that fits.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's two things that you'll never see Donald Trump do. Have a pet. I'm sure that, and then, you know, they can sue me if they hear this and want to. But I have a sense there's a certain mentality of certain types of people that as children do unpleasant things to creatures. You know? And I
Well, you don't have to go very, you don't have to go very far for that. There's always Mike Huckabee. And that repulsive story. Oh, his vile little son tortured and beat lynched and tortured and beat a dog to death and then set fire to it at like Boy Scout camp. And then Mike Huckabee, while he was governor of Arkansas, ordered the Arkansas State Police to cover it up.
Well, that sounds about right. And then there was Mitt. Remember, was on the family vacation
yeah,
and strapped the dog carrier to the roof of the station wagon, and the dog puked and crapped and peed and God knows what else. Oh, Jesus! But the two things you'll never see Trump do is having a loving relationship with an animal, a dog or a cat or something, or laugh. Have you noticed the guy has no discernible sense of joy or humor?
Nope, and never has. Probably had it beaten out of him as a child. He's like a character from The Name of the Rose.
Name of the Rose. Is that the same as the Sean Connery movie?
That is the Sean Connery movie.
Okay, I know the title, but I don't believe I ever saw it.
Okay, from the Ad Hoc Horn Research Department, being staffed at this point by Brother Deacon Asa, Clinton's chocolate lab was named Buddy. He got hit by a car. And Bush's Scottish Terrier was Barney. And he once bit a White House reporter. Barney did, not Bush.
Channeling is inner Pompeo.
Barney woke up W after W passed out drunk and fell off the couch and hit his head on the coffee table.
Good Lord. I remember that. Didn't he say he choked on a
pretzel?
Pretzel or Well, thinking about the White House pets, Caroline Kennedy had a pony named Macaroni. And didn't Nixon or Ford had a dog named Liberty.
Sit, Liberty, sit.
Yeah. Setter of some sort. And I think Nixon's dog was it was King Timahoe. Isn't that right? Somebody can look that up.
I mean, there was Checkers.
Well, yeah, that was our little dog Checkers.
That was back when that's respectable. That was back when he was vice president.
That's right. That's right. There's a speech called the Checkers speech, where he explains Checkers was a gift from a man down in Texas, a little black and white checkered dog. And you know how the girls love dogs. We went up to the Baltimore Union Station to pick him up, and they loved the dog, and they named him Checkers. And he went on about Pat's respectable Republican cloth coat and God knows what else. He never did explain the $18,000 in the slush fund.
That wasn't a slush fund. That was Checkers' kibble fund, and the same guy in Texas gave him that too.
Well, probably so. But veering away from activities here, sad as they may be, furniture on the highway. The first few years when I moved to California, I was still driving. And I noticed, and I've lived a lot of places, having been in radio, but it seems to me, at least down in this part of California, there is one boatload of shit on the highways or the sides of the highways out here in California. You could probably furnish a small apartment with the stuff that you can find. And I've never encountered anything, you know, visually watching something fall off of a vehicle in front of me. And I don't intend to because I don't drive anymore. But, Jesus, we get it here, too. We get it here, too. And as far as the calling your senators, I've called Senator Feinstein's office a number of times and always gotten a human being. I called Senator Boxer's office a few times and also got a human being. I don't believe I've ever called Senator Kamala Harris's number, so I don't know what's there. I know that my longtime U.S. House member, Susan Davis, who unfortunately is retiring after this term, always has a live person when you call her D.C. office or her. And talk about constituent service. That's the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. Apparently, a large number of today's crop of House members and senators have forgotten about constituent service. I've read most of, well, all except the new one that hasn't come out yet, of Robert Caro's books about LBJ. It's like a 5-book series when it's all over and done. And I remember reading in the book that had to do with his years in the House of Representatives and then in the Senate, even before he became Senate Majority Leader, this is LBJ I'm talking about, he was a stickler. If the phone rang, if you didn't get it by the second or third ring, you were called on the carpet. If somebody wrote in with a constituent issue, that letter was responded to the same day within 24 hours of the time that it was opened. And of course, in those days, it was before telephone answering machines and voicemail, obviously.
Yeah, but even in the modern era, that's good practice. I mean.
Well, that's what I mean.
Say what I will and I do about Joe Manchin. He has done a good job in terms of hiring staff and a chief of staff who pay close attention to constituent services. you do not email him, that you do not get a response back in writing. If you call, you are treated respectfully, and it's always, I'll pass your message along to the senator.
Yeah.
And you know, he and I are completely at odds on many issues, especially those relating to the filthy coal industry. But if you run across him and I have, and you go, hey Joe, how's it going? Oh, and he always knows your name.
Yeah.
And he's not prone to being openly vindictive. He does all his work in the background. But you know, it's an undeniable skill set. And you know, if you're like Shelley Moore Capito, and you just turn on the answering machine, it probably means a blast email has gone out saying call Shelley Moore Capito and tell her to quit honoring Donald Trump more than she does her oath to the Constitution, and so you know, fuck them.
Well, see, that's a pretty chicken shit way to approach.
Well, Shelley Moore Capito is a chicken shit kind of senator. She is. You'd have to read up on Arch Moore, her daddy, but he was the pinnacle of political corruption in this state.
Yeah. Well, to my way of thinking, Bob, if you can't stand the heat, you've got no business being in the kitchen. You know, and part of the job is not getting up on the House or the Senate floor and pontificating or counting your campaign contributions and, you know, looking out for the bigwigs. A huge part of what you're up to, or at least theoretically, is your constituents at home and serving them and representing them. And they are like, you know, that old Ford Motor Company slogan, quality is job one. Constituents and responsible leadership and representation is job one. And if you're not up to that or up for that, then you need to be, you know, running a hardware store or selling shoes or something, you know? Well, I've got a question about the impeachment thing, because to be honest, the last, you know, week or so, most of my attention and waking hours and all have been, you know, taking care of the cat to the best of my ability. So I've been watching and listening with one eye and one ear and not sleeping much because of, you know, wanting to be attentive to chirps. But you mentioned that, well, two things that you mentioned. The Senate may vote on whether to have a conversation about calling witnesses. Was that the gist of it?
Well, it's not even going to be a conversation. It's going to be a vote. You know,
go ahead.
The first thing to be considered is, will we have it's going to be voted on a motion to have a conversation about whether to have witnesses. And that comes before the question of whether we have witnesses. So that's why Moscow Mitch has set it up that way, because if he can stop it at the, shall we have a conversation about it? If the answer is no,
yeah,
then it's just over.
Well, again, that's the chicken shit way of proceeding.
Right, because Moscow Mitch is a chicken shit. And I got to tell you, one of the things I regret out of the time that I was down in Alabama, I did not have time to go and do the research and see if I could find that godforsaken hole in the ground where Moscow Mitch grew up in Sheffield, Alabama. It was just across the river from me, but my time was largely consumed with what I was there to do, but I just wanted to see if I could dig deep enough to find out where it was and go and look at it and say, damn you.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that he was from Alabama originally.
No field like Sherfield.
Well, see, the whole thing about this procedural bullshit, totally needless to first have a vote on whether we'll even consider the idea of witnesses. And then, depending on how that goes, to then vote on whether or not.
But it's not a terrible idea if your goal is to prevent witnesses from being called, putting as many impediments in the road, you know, couches, rocks, potholes, as you can, is strategically sound.
Well, you're probably too young to really have a conscious memory of this, but when the Paris peace talks were going on, I guess in 68, I think that's when they were.
Yeah, I'm too young to know, but I know.
Yeah, the U.S. and North Vietnam, the first big chunk of time was spent arguing about the shape of the fucking table. And once they got that established, then the big argument was who gets to sit at the table.
Oh, I thought you were going to reference the fact that Nixon's un-American activity included his decision to torpedo quietly the peace talks.
Well, was that tied into his first run in 68?
Yeah, because LBJ knew about it, and he said, "God damn it, I can't do anything about it."
Yeah, because if he to reveal that he knew would reveal that they were listening in.
Yeah, among other things, and of course a hue and cry that he was trying to subvert the electoral process by putting his thumb on the scales.
Well, I'll tell you what pisses me off. There's any number of things on any given day that piss me off. But something that pisses me off more and more as I really dwell on it and think about it and look back at, the last 30 years or so. Longer than that, the late 70s. You mentioned the gun thing. It was back in 78 or something when the NRA went batshit crazy. They were meeting in Cincinnati or Cleveland, and some really crazy, crazy faction took over the NRA and shifted their approach to things in terms of guns. And it was really in the GOP, as it came to be later, a little later, really the 70s were pivotal. Those were the early days of the gathering of forces. Do you remember a guy? He was somewhere in Virginia, Richard Viguerie, I believe his name was, who was a big mass mailer. And when I say mailer, I don't mean emailer. I mean postal mailer, who worked on behalf of conservative causes. And, and then the moral majority, so-called, came into being in the 70s. And Reagan, as early as 75, there was talk of Reagan really challenging Gerry Ford for the nomination, because Ford was the first appointed president, but he ran in his own right against Jimmy Carter in 76. Well, it wasn't a sure thing in 76 that he was, Reagan apparently was in some of the primaries, I think, and really was trying to orchestrate, it was trying to win already committed delegates, I think is how the story goes. You know, and God knows we know how Reagan turned out. And what a profoundly negative impact his 8 years had on America and the world. But what getting to the point of my rant, what really pisses me off is the Republicans, in some vital way, have lost their way, or they have taken up bad habits.
Might be a better way. Hold on, wait a minute. I got a real problem with that. At least I don't know when you think they lost their way, but I know for a fact that, for instance, Strom Thurmond went running to the loving arms of the Republican Party in the late 1940s because he couldn't tolerate the idea of a Democratic Party that was even remotely sympathetic to or interested in the support of the African-American community. So it's got to be before then that they were good people.
Oh, wait, I'm talking way before, way. I mean, the very...
The last, the last genuinely good Republican president was also the first one. Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
After that, they're
crooked. I would also give Teddy Roosevelt a couple of kudos, at least in terms of some of his progressive policies. I mean, he was a warmonger, but a lot of them were back in those days.
You left out racist, but that's okay.
Well, yeah.
Let me put a caveat on that since we're down the historical rabbit hole now. Garfield, James Garfield, became the Republican nominee when he said it was his goal to right the ship and put the country back on a footing of respecting Lincoln's vision for Reconstruction and for fully integrating what were referred to as the freedmen into American life.
Yeah, and he ended up getting shot. Is it James Garfield?
Yeah, he got shot, and then he was killed by doctors.
Yeah.
I mean, he died. He didn't die of the gunshot wound. He died of medical malpractice.
Well, let me clarify what I was saying about lost their way. There was a time in this country, and it's been within my lifetime, a fairly recent past, if you consider 30 or 40 years recent, when there were moderate Republicans and even a few liberal Republicans, you know? And now they're just... It was no mistake that the elephant was chosen as their party symbol, because if you've ever been to a circus, back when circuses had elephants, they parade in a circle, you know, the trunk holding the tail of the one in front, and so on down the line, walking in a circle, lumbering along, going nowhere, with a pretty shitty view of things, you know? What I'm saying is, it just pisses me off that we have come to the point where we are in this country, where a manifest lunatic like Donald John Trump could be the chief executive of this country, and people in the House and the Senate who should probably know better, and some of them were on record during the primaries, were saying pretty nasty things about Donald Trump. I give you Lindsey Graham. You remember all the stuff that he said about Trump?
Oh, hell, Lindsey Graham, Willard Romney.
Yeah.
But again, that's why I go back to this theory that nobody else seems to be, maybe they're just afraid to say it out loud, and I'm not. The only thing that provides, as far as I can tell, an adequate explanation of why a Willard Romney or a Lindsey Graham, who tried to warn the nation about Donald Trump, and now have their tongues between the creases of his fucking toes, is that they're afraid of being shot.
Well, when you said about their tongue being firmly planted, I thought it was up further and around back. They apparently think They probably think that Trump's orange butthole is her butterscotch candy dispenser.
Now, see, I was trying to take it easy on dinner in the Mountain Time Zone, and you're not having it, are you?
Well, no, I'm in a fucking foul mood. I mean, when it comes right down to it, and I don't mean to take it out on the Horn family, Lord knows, because they've loved me, or at least tolerated me. But these people should know better. And you just kind of want them to grow a fucking pear, What happened to backbone in this country and being one's own person? I mean, and authenticity is another thing that's in short supply. And love and compassion are in short supply. And having an attitude of, being about making the country work positively and appropriately for all concerned. And it's not an impossible dream because...
It's concept of the greatest good for the greatest number.
Well, we've done that in my lifetime, and I'm not that old,
Yeah.
And it's disheartening after a while when you think every 2 years or 4 years or 6 years... when you get to vote, that things are going to be better, or at least the possibility is presented, almost said prevented, Freudian slip there, the possibility is presented that we could turn a corner or turn a page or make a resolution or just be better, And at any given moment,
Scott, there's a third of this country that thinks those moments you just described are the country going wrong. There's a reason that Make America Great Again had a resonance with these ignorant troglodytes.
I know.
Normal, decent people see the advancement of civil rights as a net good and a positive. Maggots don't. Decent people see the expansion of civil rights for the LGBTQ community as a net positive. Maggots don't.
But here's my question, and you've already answered it, maybe without knowing. You said a third of these people... and then listed the number of things where they just don't have a real good outlook on things. Well, that means the other two-thirds don't have a mindset such as that. Where are the other two-thirds? Because numerically speaking, we've got the advantage. But why don't we capitalize on that and find a way to implement it from coast to fucking coast? It boggles the mind. At least it boggles my mind.
I understand.
I just don't, like I was saying before, every 2, 4, or 6 years when we get to vote, ever since I've been voting, and I started voting in 72 when I was 18, I'm thinking, well, maybe this time, we'll do a little better instead of falling further behind. But the last couple of cycles, it's been almost a false hope or being on a fool's errand or something. And I can't tell you how frightening a prospect, well, I guess you already know how frightening a prospect it is that in some months hence, we will have an opportunity to regain some degree of control and equilibrium in this country by retaking the White House, holding on to the House, and from my lips to God's ears, retaking the Senate. And even that's not going to be enough, because then you have the massive a monumental task of beginning to undo all of the bullshit that's been foisted upon us and the abuses and the neglect dating back to the age of Reagan.
It's almost like there's too much to it. It's too much to think that we would accomplish it. I mean, if you're going to go all the way back to Reagan, yeah, it is too much. Right now, though, it is an existential fight for survival, the survival of the republic, and the concepts that energize and provide its raison d'être. And to that end, look. Let me see if I can sort through this in my own mind in real time on the fly and have it make sense to you too. We need to take the Senate, but taking the Senate means little if Mitch McConnell is still there to beat the shit out of Charles Schumer every time he opens his mouth. And McConnell will do that.
Oh, yeah.
So part of the job, and there was an announcement today of a new group whose sole focus is to unseat Mitch McConnell and punish his allies. And
now that's, is it like a pack?
Yeah.
If I was
a praying man, I'd pray that they can accomplish their goal. Because we cannot wait for natural processes to finally rid the country of Mitch McConnell once and for all. Then there's the presidency. And I'll tell you, I am not sanguine about our prospects. Now, that's just me being Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine. I recognize that. But it is what it is, because I'm seeing way too much dissension in the ranks on the Democratic side. Maybe that's because I'm overexposed to social media. I hope it is. But I don't. When I see if it's not so and so, I'm staying home. My heart sinks, and there's way too much of that. And on the other hand, you see a lot of vote blue no matter who, and there's always some little pissant out there going, "God damn it, no." And that way lies the second, you know, the goddamn it no, that way lies the second Trump term. And so Agnes and I were sitting around, I think it was last night, and she said, "You know he's getting a second term, don't you?" And I said, "Don't even say that out loud."
God, she conjured a couch. Let's hope that she's... I don't know, Bob. I'm doing my best to keep my sunny side up. And these people who are going to go out in the yard and eat grass if their candidate doesn't get to be the nominee. I mean, we've already been down that road. We see where that leads. We saw it in 2016, friends.
Labor man is saying, "Scott, just be best."
Well, I was going to try to avoid that particular phrase, you know. But at any given moment, Bob, every human being on the planet has the opportunity to choose to behave appropriately. You know?
Yeah.
And it, to me, life seems to unfold more gracefully and wonderfully and beautifully when you choose that on a momently basis. And I'm sure your experience has been along those lines, and those listening.
Although having said that, Kyle sent you an email saying, Scott ruining dinner in every fucking time zone for the next couple of days, and you can forget sleep with that visual. Jesus.
Well, I'm sorry.
You failed to choose harmony and beauty in that moment, Scott. I'm just saying.
Well, I was going for the laugh
got a serious email from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line: the deck is stacked. Scott needs to realize that the 30% controls the majority of the legislatures. By 2040, 30% of the population will control 70% of the Senate. Those are just numerical realities. Another one, James in Illinois says another one-third is useless. You know, there's a third that's maggot, there's a third that's sane, and another third that's useless. Consider the number of people who stayed the fuck home in 2016, and you recognize that some of this is it's not even self-inflicted. It's more like there were a percentage of Americans who noticed that the power line was laying in a puddle of water and joyfully danced in it. And the people who cared paid the price. I mean, consider, I was talking about it last night, you know, the person I saw up at the Wiggling Pig who already had his Keep America Great 2020 hat on. Now, he was just anybody West Virginia that you see in a little rural grocery store. And, you know, he wasn't playing with himself or howling about Mexican rapists or people with calves the size of cantaloupe or hollering about the moose limbs. But by wearing that hat, you knew that those were all things that were going on inside him.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you were broke down on the side of the road, he might very well stop and help you change your tire. And that is where it gets confusing. That's where it becomes troublesome.
Earlier, you mentioned Gabriel Sherman, the writer for, I believe you said, Vanity Fair. And I forget what the article was about, but it was, I'll listen on the replay and look up the article. But a couple of years ago, he wrote a book called The Loudest Voice in the Room. It was about Fox News, but it was more specifically about Roger Ailes. And I recommend that book to anyone who hasn't read it, The Loudest Voice in the Room. It gives you a history of Fox, and a lot of people don't know the history of Fox or Murdoch or even Ailes, and the mindset behind that, and the marching orders and the programming approach and techniques that attract people who become slack-jawed and knuckle-draggers and people who are otherwise, at some point they might have been otherwise rational more often than not, but have been fed, had a bill of goods foisted upon them, and misinformation that over the course of years that Fox News has been around have literally brainwashed their viewers. There was a documentary, Brainwashing My Dad, the title was along those lines.
I remember
and it's
that.
On Netflix or Amazon Prime, and worth watching. I think everybody who watches it will say, I know A, B, C, and D, people in my family, you know, who are in that boat. You know? It's, well, listen, I've been on here long, way too long. I don't have really any words of wisdom to close with other than, you know, continue to be attentive, continue to be involved, and continue to do everything you can possibly do, A, to keep the horn on the air, and B, to make your country work in rational, tangible ways. And elect people who are for whom that is job one. There's always going to be the crazies. There's always going to be the folks who don't know or don't care. But somehow or another, we've got to cobble together an effective electorate who will behave appropriately and positively when they mail in their ballot or go down to the polling place to cast their vote.
Yeah.
It's an existential thing.
Well, it's like something Flavio said a minute ago. Get millennials registered to vote and get them out en masse. That's the task before the Democratic Party if they want to unseat Trump. If, on the other hand, the DNC's focus is on making sure Bernie is not the nominee, then we may get a Trump second term. I don't think that's the only way we get a Trump second term, Flavio. I think a Trump second term is a possibility no matter who the nominee is. And I don't think the DNC's out there, goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultzing or any of the other scab pulling stuff that still goes with 2016. You know, Bernie's, if the DNC was really trying to stop Bernie, he wouldn't be where he is in Iowa. Or New Hampshire.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we got to unfixate our minds from that bullshit talking point from 2016. Goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Goddamn DNC. Because it was that. As for getting millennials registered to vote, yeah, as many as you possibly can, and you got to preach and teach along the way, and then you got to get them to actually go and vote. Now, this is easier in some states than others. States with the, you know, mail-in voting, okay? I've always been fascinated by the caucus process, but having learned a little bit more about it, Jesus, is there a less democratic way to select a candidate? Holy shit! It's hard enough in this country to get people to just show the hell up and cast a ballot. And you want people who have to work for a living to go and hang out at a caucusing place for hours on end as people harangue each other over I'm sure in Iowa, given the nature of the candidates, there's some first class fucking haranguing going on. That caucus process decreases, and I find it interesting from and fascinating. If you're an absolute political junkie, you'll show up and you'll stay for the 2 or the 3 or the 4 hours or whatever it takes. But if you're somebody that's got to go get back home and feed the youngins, you're locked out of the process for all intents and purposes.
Well, I've always lived in primary states. I've never lived in a state where there are caucuses. But, you know, I'm not sure about Iowa. I mean, some of the nicest people I've ever known or worked with in radio, I can think of two in particular who were from Iowa. Decent, salt-of-the-earth people, you know?
Yeah.
And one of them was a liberal and one of them was a conservative. And they didn't really go overboard either in either camp. They were just, that's where their mind and heart was. And they didn't go crazy with it one way or another. You know? And I'm sure they've got statistics on the predictive nature of the winner in Iowa going on to become the nominee and going on to become the president after that. Is there any rhyme or reason to that?
I heard somewhere that like 9 out of the last Democratic nominees who won Iowa went on to become the Democratic nominee. Or Democratic.
Okay, but what about actually
the ones? What the about ones actually, who did? The ones who didn't were like Tom Harkin and Tom Daschle.
Yeah.
And those were, you know, those were homers, for all intents and purposes.
Or were they Jethros?
Stop it. Okay. Don't confuse the issue. But. There's no magic candidate, and I would beg people to please stop worshiping candidates. I'm fucking begging. If you want to worship something, worship the Constitution and say that that is the one damn thing you will that you will work to save beyond all others.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a messiah among the Democratic field. I just don't. There's nobody there that the minute they get the nomination, we're just going to say, well, you know, we don't have to hold the November election. Obviously, they're going to win because we've been to that goddamn movie, Scott.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, well, there's no. I mean, a month before the election, Nitwit Nero, who wasn't Nitwit Nero then, he was just a Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, was standing behind a microphone saying, well, you know, when I get waxed, it's going to be because it's rigged. The situation's rigged. The whole election's rigged. And then suddenly, it turned out it was rigged, but it was rigged in his fucking favor, and he stopped saying anything about it being rigged, and instead, he actually won the popular vote. That's what the spirochetes were telling him. But
yeah, won the popular vote, Bob, had a bigger inaugural crowd.
And they bussed people into New Hampshire from Massachusetts, God damn it.
Yeah. I think there was a book or an article with the title, Hello, He Lied. You know, it's like his epitaph on his tombstone. Here lies Donald Trump, and lies, and lies, and lies, and lies. You know?
Yeah, without a doubt. Oh, apparently I dropped out in the middle of saying what Agnes said, or that's what Bill Bulbrick is telling me. No, Agnes looked at me last night and said, you know we're going to get a second term of him. I mean, you heard that, Scott. Everybody else apparently didn't.
Yeah, I did. I definitely heard it. I'm still trembling at the very thought of it. What does she base that on? Just
her innate knowledge of human nature, and the mean cussedness of stupid people.
Well, then again, I'm the relentless optimist, you know?
Yep.
But I've got a pretty wide streak of realism that runs through me. This ain't my first rodeo, by God. You know?
Right.
And I've seen them come and I've seen them go, and I, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Ralphs went out and grabbed some resources real quick. If you decide to go out and rescue or adopt, I've got a couple of links for you, courtesy of Ralphs, that I can share with you via email.
Oh, yeah, definitely send them. Well, the San Diego Humane people, they were so good to me when I adopted Chirps in the summer of 2015, that you know how on your Amazon Smile, I think it's called, you can select a charity, and it turns out that they are qualified to be on that, and they've always been my choice. So, I mean, I've supported them as best I can. And, but yeah, do send those links, because I'm always open to possibilities, you know, and information.
All right, Scott. Well, listen, Bob,
thank you for taking the time.
I know how bad it hurts, man, and there's no way to make it hurt less.
Yeah.
But let time pass, and I'm so very sorry, because
it's a
big old ugly hole in your heart, and it's a broken place, and I know it is.
Yeah, it is, and I appreciate, you know, you're letting me share this with the Horn family, and I appreciate your being there and their being there. They're being there. And, you know, it you just got to roll with it. I mean, God, if I haven't learned that by now, then I'll never learn it. You know, we're all here for a season.
Exactly.
And that includes furry, finned, and feathered friends. But anyway, thank you, Bob. And onward and upward.
All right. You take care, Scott. Be well.
All right. Thank you. Take
care.
We'll
talk soon. Bye now.
See you. All right. Bye-bye.
I feel so bad for Scott. It hurts. It hurts losing it hurts losing fur family. It just does. So we got about 19 minutes left in the program, and we are still $165 away from meeting John's challenge. And that's just a shame. But thanks to you, thanks to those of you, Libby and Glenn and Ralphs, who jumped in, that means that we have raised, in the course of 2 days of programming, we have raised $35. And hopefully, well, I don't know, some sort of a miracle in the next 18 minutes to knock out $165 so we can be even for the first 2 days of the last week of January. I've got a thanks, Labor Man. I'll send that link along to Scott. Thank you very kindly. If you want to jump in, there's a few minutes left in the program. Of course, there's always more material. And for this particular for this particular Titanic Tuesday, just a couple of things. With regard to Alan Dershowitz and his stentorian address to the Senate last night, I have a quote. An Alan Dershowitz quote because he spent a lot of time yakking about the impeachment of Nixon and the impeachment of Clinton. But if we travel back to the dim and distant days of yesteryear, we can find Alan Dershowitz being quoted by the Associated Press on November the 21st, 1974. A number of the crooks, hacks, and grifters who were being tried for their involvement with Watergate were at that time actually on trial. They were on trial, among other things, for obstruction of justice. And so, the Associated Press puts together this article that says, the thrust of which is that some crimes can be so heavily publicized that no defendant can get a fair trial. They went to Alan Dershowitz, who was arguing that all the trials should have been moved out of D.C.
And with what was then tape running, one presumes, Alan Dershowitz said the following. I'm not happy seeing Richard Nixon's gang being tried by blacks and liberals in the District of Columbia. That really happened. So, even before he was, at least as far as we know, even before he was a pal of Harvey Weinstein or Jeffrey Epstein or O.J. Simpson or any of the other assholes with whom he has associated himself over the years, up to and including and not limited to Donald J. Trump, Alan Dershowitz was a disgusting white supremacist racist who was convinced that 12 persons tried and true, if they had skin darker than the color of a grocery bag, couldn't possibly render impartial justice to the thugs of the Nixon administration. Did Alan Dershowitz ever repent of that statement? I do not know. I would think that given the fact that he is still persisting in claiming that even though a woman credibly claims that she was told as a child to have sex with Alan Dershowitz, told by Jeffrey Epstein, and he's still claiming it never happened, just like Prince Andrew remains clammed up and refuses to participate in the investigation. I'm guessing no. No, Al's probably still a complete turd. Lady B with a note says, funny that during the time of Barack Obama, all we kept hearing about was the imminent collapse of society under Barack Obama and that it was taking place in real time. People were walking around armed to the teeth, holding up flags and talking about how they were prepared to fight to save their democracy. But now that there are actually signs that the republic is collapsing, these people are standing around clapping their hands with glee. Funny, it almost seems like they want to see it burn. Watching like the arsonists they are. This is the fire they started, and they won't be happy until everything is turned to ashes. But where do we go from there? I just got back to listening, so sorry for your loss, Scott. Hopefully a new friend will grace your life again soon. Thanks for all you do, Bob. We'll get through this. We just got to try to stay afloat. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you. And thank you for the wonderful words you send along. And since it is Titanic Tuesday, who better to check in with than maximum grifter and I suppose we would say amateur photographer and helper outer of innocent young pool boys in South Florida, Jerry Falwell Jr. We have a new word now, and it and the concept behind it is so ludicrous I scarcely can credit it. But no, this is just the America we live in. The new word is vexit. Vexit. V-E-X-I-T. A group of disaffected maggots and gun humpers, mostly, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, have said that they are wanting to repent of their Virginianess. And so today, over in Martinsburg, West Virginia, Jerry Falwell Jr. showed up to meet with none other than West Virginia governor and three times the man Donald Trump is, and that's saying something, Jim Justice. They were there at the Blue Ridge Community and Technical College in Martinsburg in a room full of robots to talk about the economic miracle taking place in West Virginia. Shh. There isn't one. And long about through there is when Jerry Falwell Jr., who you'll recall engaged the services of Michael Cohen to make an unpleasant story about, an unpleasantly, apparently salacious story about him and his good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-toting, ammo-sexual wife go away. Well, Jerry Falwell Jr. declared, many counties in Virginia are taking a long, hard look at escaping the barbaric, totalitarian, and corrupt democratic regime that is trampling on individual rights throughout the state. It's a commonwealth, dickhead. Yeah, the Virginia legislature is now controlled by Democrats for the first time in eons. And there's a Democratic governor. And lo and behold, that legislature is taking some itsy bitsy teeny tiny little baby steps toward trying to reduce the likelihood of some asshole with a gun stopping 7-year-olds from becoming 8-year-olds. And according to Jerry Falwell Jr., those efforts are barbaric, totalitarian, and corrupt. And so Jerry Falwell Jr., no kidding, wants some Virginia counties to secede from Virginia with the blessing of Congress so they can become part of, wait for it, try not to laugh too hard or spit dinner across the room, West Virginia. Falwell declared, yeah, it's a long shot, no question about it, and it depends on how much grassroots support it receives. It has happened twice before, and I don't think it's as much of a long shot as it was for Liberty University to grow from a little, small Bible college to the largest Christian university in the world in the last 10 years. I consider the use of the word Christian in that sentence to be superfluous. No, inaccurate. No, dishonest. I've seen miraculous things happen, and so has Governor Justice. Jesus, it's a miracle every time Jim Justice gets up and walks across a room. Jim Justice is all for Vexit. If you're out there, no matter where you may be, Virginia or wherever you may be, as an individual, or as a business, or whatever, West Virginia's waiting for you with open arms. See, the way West Virginia got to be West Virginia and wound up looking the way it looks, and I frankly don't want any little Virginia counties added onto our outline, because we're the only state in the union which, if you show somebody with your hand, the outline of the state of West Virginia forms an obscene gesture. And here in West Virginia, we don't have much, but by God, we've got that. Jesus. But apparently there are some urine-colored, snake-flag-toting, Trump-voting morons and Titanic intellects who would like to take their counties, like, Rockingham and Bath, that are already on the West Virginia line and make it part of West Virginia. And I say, fuck off. What Jerry Falwell Jr. is upset about is that the Commonwealth of Virginia, in their budget proposal, knocked out student aid for what Jerry Falwell Jr. refers to as thousands of online students attending private colleges, while increasing aid for more affluent resident students. What he's talking about is the fact that the Jerry Falwell University lives and dies on the hot grift of online education. It's one of the most significant sources of income for that massive hustle. Jerry declared, "We have a rare opportunity to make history in our time. I wish Liberty wasn't so big. I'd move it over." You fucking liar. You don't wish it wasn't so big. And you'd no sooner live in West Virginia than you'd live on the moon, Jer. Then he added, so as to make things abundantly clear, "President Trump and Governor Justice are the 1-2 punch that this state needed, I believe." Well, it was a 1-2 punch, all right. First we got Trump, and then Justice turned into a Republican, the Republican that he already always was, and this state is pretty much reeling from that 1-2 punch. Damn. Never a dull moment. Hell, I have to drive to Virginia if I want Kaneka sausage. I can't get it in West Virginia. I either have to drive to Morgantown if I want Popeyes, that's 3 hours away, or drive an hour and a half to across the Virginia line to get it there. We damn sure don't have any food cities or Publix grocery stores. What a bunch of ignorant Republican silliness. James in Illinois says, "Can't we just wall them off? Find a place, call it a camp, build a wall and put them in it. Put all the guns in there and lock the gate from the outside. And then wait for the inevitable." And hey, thank you very kindly to James. Thank you, James. Different James, not the James that just sent that email. Thank you very kindly, James, for jumping in. We're down to 160 to go on John's kind challenge. Hopefully James and Glenn and Libby and Ralphs will get some company, maybe from the overnight crew. Be awfully helpful. So that's it. Second day home. And glad to be home. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind contributions, either as subscribers or a la carte. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter how you choose so to do, live, podcast, whatever. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.